Good evening, everybody. It is Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. It's 8:15 p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. This is the Fakeologist speaking. I'm going to get right into my show tonight because I have a guest named Mark Friesen, the Grizzly Patriot. He's been on before and he just logged in. And I'm going to bring him right on since he only has a short amount of time. So, Mark, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I hear you well. I'm glad because you're on your mic tonight. The other night I was watching you and I think you were not on your mic. You're on your computer mic and I couldn't hear you as well. So I'm glad you got that.
Where were you watching it?
Oh, Rumble, I think. It just sounded tinny.
That's weird because I was on my mic, but I'll have to check the settings. Maybe.
Well, sometimes I think it picks up your computer mic or your laptop mic. But yeah, I was just, I don't know if you can see the screen. I was just playing your latest video. And I titled it Agenda 21 SDGs Tool to Destroy Nations and Implement Post-Nation State.
Right. Absolutely.
Because do you remember our interview before? We talked about a year ago.
Yeah, you bet.
Yeah. Oh, good. Because you do a lot of stuff. And you're one of my go-to people that I follow because you're almost the only person in Canada that knows what's happening, which is really sad. You're the canary singing in the coal mine right now, your head off.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while, but it is getting better. More and more people are starting to switch on, so it's good to see.
Yeah, I just wanted to really just get in touch with you and say I support you. I follow your work. I think you're doing great work. You put your money where your mouth is. You seem like the real deal, and you're trying your heart out, and you're making a huge difference, I think, as much as one person can. I just wanted to really broadcast.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, really. I mean, you put your face out there. You put your body out there, and you put your health out there. I actually was kind of worried when you got ill over the winter. And
you're not alone.
No, and I just, you know, because I'm the fakeologist and I also talk about viruses and terrain theory. So I was a little worried because I've been saying that this is not a real virus and you can't catch a virus. And I really do believe that. But I figured because you were really probably pushing your health and your physical limits by touring around and stressing yourself out, probably that might have been the reason that you got pretty sick.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I've been burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah.
And then of course was in a campaign and I was very run down, so I was primed to get sick. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And boy did I ever.
Yeah, and the fact that you came on Terrible and were coming here, I thought, wow, what the hell is going on? How did that come about?
That's an interesting little side story to all of this. When the decision was made to move myself, and I think there was five others at the same time, one of the doctors had called my wife and told her that this has nothing to do with his health. This isn't in his best interest, health-wise. He's in no condition to fly anywhere. This is a political move. So,
believable.
Yeah. And this is coming from a doctor who works there, telling my wife. So, of course, she wasn't allowed to come and see me. So a lot of the communication was via the phone. But, yeah, that's what he had said. So as it turned out, though, I received fantastic care at Mount Sinai in Toronto and by, one of the most world-renowned lung doctors on the planet. So turned out it worked in my favor. So plus I had Sean Taylor there, who's obviously, he's another disagreeable prick like myself and won't allow people to get away with nonsense. So,
right.
No, he.
Well, I wouldn't use the word prick. I wouldn't use the word prick. Don't you? I wouldn't put myself down as a prick.
Each other, so it's
all. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. But yeah, and so he was there to make sure that they were doing what they're supposed to, and they did. And it was like I said, it was great care, and we actually had a nurse come up to him and say, we know who you guys are, and and wow. we support what you're doing, and we thank you for what you've done. So you know, I got great care and made it through. So
here and I you am. Were right in the belly of the bloody beast. You're down the street from the Ontario scam science table. These are the guys that put the whole operation into motion. They could have. I mean, think about it. They could have walked across the street because that's where they're based, for God's sakes. You talk about being in the belly of the beast. How close could you have? I mean, seriously.
Right.
The Paul Dell'Alana School of Public Health. I mean, these are the guys that are running this whole thing. It's
yeah, exactly.
I mean, that was crazy. Just as a side note before, how much time do you have, by the way? I want to know how to pace.
I got some time. It's all good.
Oh, that's good. Because the other thing I was thinking about, because of course, and I was trying to figure out why, you know, besides the fact you're running yourself ragged doing your campaign, I also noticed that in a lot of your shows, you vaped. And one of my theories about people getting ill is I think that maybe vaping is a very more deadly thing that they've given us than even smoking. Did you ever...
You know, there's no question in my mind that that was a contributing factor to me getting ill. No question about it. I notice, you know, being a vapor, I was a vapor for a number of years. And, you know, I was pretty heavy on it. I was constant all day long.
Yeah, I watched you on your shows.
Yeah, but, you know, so what's interesting in that is... If I would shut it down for, let's say, a couple of days, just for whatever reason, you know, it would take a couple of 3 days and then I would notice my lungs clearing. So, so my body was able to, you know, deal with it a lot quicker than maybe tar from cigarette smoking.
Right.
However, I didn't do that very often. And I know that my lungs were coated in this, you know, glycol and whatever. And so, you know, between that and I'm sure it led to me getting pneumonia, right?
Right, of course.
Which is what I was so sick from.
Right.
And then, of course, being ventilated then created, you know, necrotizing pneumonia, which, you know, amplified everything. So, but yeah, there's no question that vaping was a contributing factor.
And one of the things when you were in the hospital, because I've been following all the things that they're doing to kill people, I thought, oh my goodness, I hope they didn't put them on the COVID protocol. The remdesivir, which is known as when death is near. I mean, that whole Dr. Artist guy that's going around explaining, and then I was seeing people explaining when their loved ones went to the hospital and what was happening, and they couldn't get them out. They had to kidnap them. I thought, oh my goodness, I hope he's not getting the COVID protocol.
The only thing they gave me was monoclonal antibodies in Saskatoon at RUH when I first entered, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't remember much of that. There's only, you know, I spent about three or four days before they put me under. And the only thing I really remember is I had prongs in my nose and a mask on my face trying to force oxygen into my system.
Right.
And I just wasn't taking. But I kept telling the doctors, I'm not going on the vent.
Oh, really?
I was adamant I wasn't going on the vent. But then the fourth morning, you know, I woke up, I had a terrible night, and I wasn't getting any oxygen, and I was literally suffocating, lying in a hospital bed. So I basically just, at that point, I said, well, I'm going to either die this way or I'm going to die through a vent. So goodbye. And wow, my wife had texted me and asked, you know, how my night was, and I said, terrible, wasn't good at all.
And she couldn't get in the hospital either?
What's that?
And they wouldn't let her in?
No.
Oh, God, that is so... No. These guys are such ghouls, honest to God.
Yeah,
such ghouls.
It was a pretty tough situation for her. You know, I went to sleep, so most of my experience was sleeping. It was a lot harder for everybody else, including, of course, my wife. So
yeah. And the other problem is when someone like you, high profile, is down... And we don't get any communication. The rumors just go crazy. The rumor mill just churns up. So that's.
Oh yeah, there was obituaries all over. There was even YouTube obituaries for Mark Friesen. So
no, I thought it was disgusting. There was even a website and the Twitters.
I woke up and finally got my marbles together. And had my phone with me. I was checking email and messages just the amount of hate and the vitriol that, you know, people were sending me was just, it's just sick. It's such a, I don't know, man.
But on the other hand, it does prove that you're flying over the target. I mean,
yeah, 100%.
The opposite 100%. Of, as one of my fans said, the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. So love and hate are the same thing, two sides of the same coin. So if you get someone who has the energy and passion to hate you, that's the same as love. So, man, they love you.
Right.
So that's how I look at it.
That's a good way to look at it.
No, that is the truth.
I mean, ultimately, you know, I was a prison guard for 25 years. It's to me, it's water off a duck's back, you know. And what I will say, though, is it was what was really overwhelming was all of the love that I received and all of the prayers and you know, just the amount of people that prayed for me. It was really super overwhelming. I was a believer in prayer and spirituality before, but I can tell you after that experience, it's a lot deeper than it was.
Because it works. It works, yeah. Like, there is something to the soul energy, the spirit energy.
It's energy. It's, and when a bunch of people are doing it, I don't know, man, there's something to it. And again, I'm not a religious person, but I am spiritual.
Right.
I believe in, you know, the soul of a human and humanity.
Yeah.
So when people come together for a common cause, it seems to, you know, I don't know. Weird.
Well, we know that the medical system barely knows why we get ill and why we get better. So just the idea that there's electromagnetic energy between people, you know, when somebody comes near you, you not only feel their heat, but you can feel their energy when they look at you. There's something that goes through the ether, which they said doesn't exist either. So, you know, modern science, for as much as people worship it, it can't explain a lot of stuff.
Right. Right.
Oh, yeah. 100%. The spirituality is good. Why don't we talk about Agenda 21? Because I really enjoy this topic because I don't know if you've been researching as long as I have. Maybe you have, maybe longer. But there's a guy named Alan Watt, a Canadian with a big Scottish accent, that's been talking about Agenda 21 for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And he predicted pretty much all this because it wasn't hidden. You just had to read the Club of Rome, and you had just read all these documents that they've been putting out.
They've been telling us.
Yeah, they've been messaging us, not directly. You know, our politicians don't come out and say it, as you found out from Pee-Pee. But, the elite through their NGOs have been telling us. And they have to, because they're preconditioning us, so when it does happen, we're not stunned, we're not surprised, and we think, we knew it was coming. Yeah, no kidding.
Right. Absolutely. 100%.
So everything that
we've seen here in the last few years is all part of that social engineering and conditioning and preparing the masses for what's yet to come, softening them up. It's a big deal.
Like the thing I wonder is, do you think if they brought this to a vote, if they did a positive campaign to Canada and said, listen, the world belongs, all countries belong to everyone. We don't want sovereign governments anymore. Everyone should share. And, you know, even my grandfather said, who I don't know if he was a socialist or not, but he said, if the rich countries don't share with the poor countries are just going to come and take it. And I always thought, man, there's a bit of a point to that. So, the way I look at this Agenda 21, and I'll ask the question properly. Do you think if they presented this to Canadians, that they would go for it in the way it's going to end up? Would they vote for it?
That's what I'm trying to avoid. And that's why I've been screaming as loud as I have been for as long as I have been. Because I need to plant the seed into people to get them to understand who is creating the policies, who is creating these cookie cutter policies for all the nations, who's going to be making these decisions, and are these decisions in the best interest of our country, and reinforcing this idea that, you know, policies created should be created in Canada by Canadians for Canadians, and sort of, you know, getting people to think in those terms. Because let's face it, if we don't do this and we don't plant enough seeds, and if we don't get to the table before they do, They're very good at promoting agendas. They're very good at promoting narratives. And so we have to be doing this. And a lot of us have done this for a while. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, if they market something, if they, you know, get something out there, they can be very effective with it in their messaging and the language they use. And they can convince a lot of people who just don't think critically. I mean, we've watched this for 2 years through COVID, people not thinking critically, and they're able, look what they're able to achieve. I mean, they've convinced business owners to shut down their business and go out of business.
Yeah.
Because why? You know, they've convinced people to lock themselves in their home and don't go see grandma and let grandma die alone. And this is what people are promoting. And if you don't listen to this, they attack you ruthlessly. So, you know, this ability of them to establish a narrative like we're all in this together, you know, is very good and it's very effective. So again, this is why I continue to pound the pavement and get people to think. Imagine policy created without your interest in mind living in Canada. And to meet some sort of massive global governance model and to meet these goals of redistribution of wealth, to suck as much wealth out of Western civilization as possible, to reduce our standard of living down to the second and third world countries, so we're all equal. Imagine that. Imagine having your standard of living, your way of life destroyed so we can be equal with the rest of the planet. Just think about that. And so, you know, this has been my mission for 20 years. And finally, people are starting to listen.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Pierre Poilievre and that little question that I asked him, and I consider it to be the most important question in the history of questions in our country. And he failed miserably. Of course, he denied knowing anything about it. However, the benefit of that is enormous, because I got like 271,000 views on TikTok.
That was
and
great.
I think I'm up to 50,000 on Twitter, and I have no idea what Facebook is because I'm banned on Facebook right now. But, you know, so we've exposed that language, SDG, sustainable development, hopefully to a lot of people that have never heard of it before, and which is why Pierre claims to not know anything about it, because he believes most Canadians feel the same way.
How you doing?
And so he thinks he can get away with it. We can't let him.
I'm going to play that for you. This is, I'm going to play it for the audience real quick, so let me cue that up. Where was PP when, and that's what... your buddy Jeremy McKenzie calls him Little Peepee. I think it's great.
Right.
Yeah. And he is a little guy too. And this was such...
Well, yeah, he's not a big guy by any stretch.
Oh, yeah, I think you're a big guy, I think. So
yeah, and he's got little beady black eyes and shifty and
this reminds me of that song. And little bitty eyes.
Like a wet fish. It's yeah.
Oh, here we go.
What's your name? Mark, thanks for coming. Hey, we'll do a shot here.
I have one question.
Oh,
I have for you. Yeah. I'd love for you to answer.
Fire away.
You've denounced the World Economic Forum.
Yes.
Vehemently.
Yes.
Do you denounce the UN Sustainable Development Agenda, the SDGs?
I haven't read it, so I don't know what it is.
You haven't read it?
No, I haven't.
That's interesting.
Do you want to do a shot?
Sure.
All right.
Very good.
Yeah, it's just, oh, that just made me laugh. I wish you would have said no, F you. I know you're probably too polite, but I wish you would have said
He did exactly what I wanted him to do, and so my mission was accomplished.
Yeah.
But when I look back, I sort of regret not taking advantage of it and just tell him to go pound it. But
well, you're a Canadian. I know you're a Canadian. That's not in Canadians' nature to stick it. You know, I wish you had a pie in your back pocket.
If I would have done something like that, that would have been the focus.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and so I wanted that his answer to be the focus, and that's it. And then I can commentate on it as much as I want after, and I have been.
So. But he's such a politician. Like the first thing he wants to do is, do you want to? He's like a dentist. Do you want a sucker? Do you want a pitcher? And then you go through the thing, and then he just totally blows you off and ignores you. He knows exactly who you are and what. I guarantee, if he is a handler worth 5 cents, they would know who you are when you came in the building.
Stood in line for 2 hours. They knew
you would have been scoped out. I'm surprised they didn't drag you out anyway.
I am too.
Oh, and
they actually tried to get us not to film it, but just to only take pictures. I said, no, we're going to take a video of this. Thank you.
And then he goes right for the photo again. He's such a duplicate carbon copy of Trudeau. It's so sad. Yeah. I mean, it just illustrates your point beautifully that these guys are all the same. They all work for the same man. It's just so obvious.
And it's just, it's such a horrible answer for a number of reasons. I mean, if his answer is genuine, which it isn't,
I want everyone
to understand that he knows exactly what I was talking about. He's voted on it numerous times. He knows he's been a politician for 19 years.
Which should be illegal.
You know, for him not to, I mean, even if it is genuine, and again, it's not, but even if it was, it's the worst answer for anybody that wants to be a leader of anything, right? Like, you don't know the single most controversial and consequential agenda affecting every single Canadian in all aspects of their lives, and you know nothing about it. Yeah, what the hell are you doing here?
Yeah, you don't know about the tsunami that's just about to hit Canada that's just on your left. Could you turn around for a second, look at that 5,000-foot high wave?
Because he knows the party that he's running to lead is the party that's responsible for
it. I know. From Mulroney. You know, so, I mean, this has been in the works since the 50s and the 60s when they decided, just after the technocrats got kicked out of Canada. And then they brought in their man Pierre from the NDP or CCP, and this one other guy. I hope I wonder if you're listening to, just to get some historical background on this, is a Canadian named Matt Arrett. He's a really fantastic historian that has a YouTube channel and a website called Canadian Patriot, and he really explains Lord Milner, the British Roundtable. These are the guys that have been working on this world government for a long time.
These are the backroom boys.
Oh my, it's so interesting how, and he explains basically where Pierre Trudeau came from, how he was brought in and how he was mentored. And they just pick these guys out and they train them and they put them through.
Oh yeah.
Like, absolutely. These people don't fall on us by accident. These people are put into place very strategically. They engineer the entire story. I didn't even realize, because, you know, I study false flags and psyops and hoaxes that are all around us that create myths to make people do what they do. I didn't even, because Canada's such a small place, most of the time we get the crappy psyops and hoaxes. But I didn't even realize, and even Matt Ayer was explaining, the FLQ crisis was probably an engineered hoax. Well, I don't like to use the word false flag because that implies that people die, people get hurt. So that's another sort of guardrail. I go right for the word hoax and engineered event where they stage these things. But that was all part of the plan to really get Pierre Trudeau into place and keep him cemented in place as he continued to dismantle Canada. This is a long... Yeah.
100%.
These guys play the long game. And
And
I wish that they taught this in school, because I would have gone into history if I knew history was so damn interesting.
Interesting.
It is so fascinating, the long-term chess game. Mm. And I think everyone would be into history, because it's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I try to do in our town halls when we're doing them, is to add this historical context to globalism and the globalist agenda. When people listen and understand, you know, who it was that created it, who was involved, when it was started, and then you take them through the evolution, then they have context. Then they, you know, can go and research themselves and confirm, everything that I've said.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you have then a believer. Then you have somebody who's, yeah, this makes sense. And everything is verifiable, you know, with this easy to research that, yeah, you know what? This is legit. And this, we don't want this. So, you know, it's very important to add that historical context to things because then it becomes real to people.
It's amazing. Really. I mean, it's all of this is just brilliant genius. Like the guys that run the world, it's their business. They know what they're doing. It's kind of sad that we never really had a sovereign country ever. We're still just a franchise of England or Great Britain. We've never really had a real constitution. We're just a crappy act, British North America act still. Our charter is not really a traditional charter or constitution like the United States. So we really are a very manageable franchise. Like, for instance, yes, when the guy running the McDonald's in Saskatoon decides he wants to lower the prices, I think Jeremy said this, it was so brilliant as an analogy. He's going to be able to do that for about 6 hours until someone finds out. Next thing you know, right, he's going to be out the back door in the grease pit, and then the new manager will be put in. So,
yep.
It's just so fascinating. But and if people knew that, I think they've chosen Canada, or we've given, I guess, the Queen, the Dukes, the Duchesses, the NGOs in Britain, the guys that run the world, they decided Canada is the ideal candidate to go first. We're going to be the first post-nation.
We're chock full of everything the world needs.
Oh, my God. Yeah. We have a small population. They're very obedient. Yeah. They're full of loyalists. They don't mind giving out their guns.
We have oil. We have trees. We have everything. We have uranium. We have potash. We have gold. We have it all.
Yeah.
And with this small population and this enormous landmass. So, yeah.
But yeah, Canadians won't defend themselves. They're obedient. They're good slaves. We've watered down the original Canadians, the OGs, just like they have most of the Western world. So most of the people are just grateful to be in Canada as new Canadians. So they're definitely not going to fight back. They're not going to buck the system. They're not going to do anything. Right. I mean, just like if we went to another country, you're not going to buck the system if you just get there, for God's sakes. You know, you're going to be out the back door in no time. So, I mean, we're just ripe for takeover. It's a no-brainer. We have a population smaller than California. It's so easy.
Right.
And we're already fairly federalized, even though we have these individual provinces, but they don't really act very
individual. Well, and this is one of the things that I've sort of shifted or pivoted on is it's a little bit more focus provincially because within the existing constitution, which is weak, even within the language that exists, the provinces do have an inordinate amount of power. It's just that no premiers have ever exercised it other than Quebec. And so we need to get a government in, especially in Saskatchewan and Alberta, that has a backbone that'll say no to Ottawa. And you know, let's draw first blood. Let's finally stand and defend, you know, the way of life that we, you know, claim to cherish. And that's within the country. And then maybe we can lead the country, and then maybe we can lead the world. But so, you know, I'm starting to focus a little bit more attention on the people of Saskatchewan because we're kind of a neat little province here in Saskatchewan. We're a province of 1 million people.
Yeah, very small.
But we're still 50-50 urban to rural split, right? And I consider, you know, there's only two cities in Saskatchewan that I consider to be urban.
Right.
And that's Saskatoon and Regina. The rest of the cities are small. They're really rural. And then within the rural community, you still have these values of, you know,
Christianity,
self-reliance, self-determination, independence, and yes, Christianity, which is in line with all of those values and the other values that we cherish. And so they don't want to lose that self-reliance and self-determination and independence. They want to keep it. They like it because they believe they can make the best decisions for their family and their communities. And so, you know, we actually have this ability because our ruling party in Saskatchewan, its base is rural. And so we have this opportunity to steer the government or they're gone. And a perfect example of this is back in February, as the convoy was moving toward Ottawa, everybody sort of attributed Saskatchewan's decision to lift the mandates and restrictions to the convoy. But there was something else happening in the background. Somebody from the SAS party on the inside contacted me and said that their donations were at 10% of what they would normally have been at that point in time of the year in previous years.
Right.
And so when you have your base telling you loud and clear that enough is enough, then you have no choice to act or you're gone, right? So we have this ability, and so I'm going through the province here starting on Thursday. We're doing a 9-city tour and hopefully inspire and light some fires in people. So we, you know, defend these values we claim to cherish and you know, start looking at an alternative to the establishment governments that we've successfully elected here in Saskatchewan, and look to something alternative. And, you know, and again, if we can do that, if Alberta can do that, I mean, they just got rid of Kenny.
Or he got rid of himself, probably.
Maybe there's some hope. And if we do it, then, you know, maybe Manitoba will do it. Maybe, you know, BC, at least the interior and the north, will wake up and start pushing their weight around a little bit. You know, who knows? So we'll see. It's an uphill battle. There's no doubt about it, but I think we have some opportunity here.
Is there any chance that Mark would actually, take a leadership role that you've already done? Because listen, I like the PPC party. It's the only party that sort of seems against the grain, but I'm sorry. Right. Maxime Bernier has way too much baggage. I told you this before. He doesn't speak clearly like you do. You speak no guff. You've got a working class background. At least half of the there's two types of Canadians, I call them, virtuals and physicals. You're a physical. I mean, really, you've got the charisma. You've got the brains. You've got the experience. Like, why don't you get out there and just, why doesn't someone from the PPC just realize your potential and let you get out there and make a difference? Because,
well, so, you know,
it's ridiculous that people like you aren't running. And I know a lot of people say politics is not going to be the solution. Well, outside an armed insurrection, which is never going to happen, this is all we got.
It is. And so, you know, have I thought about it? Of course I've thought about it. People talk to me about it all the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm involved in politics because for me, it's a platform to educate and inform people. If that translates to some point, me running for a leadership position in whether it's provincial or federal, sure, I would consider it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have so much to do. My mission is, again, to educate and inform as many people as possible. And that's not to say I couldn't do that in a leadership role, where I can actually lead from the front
and
educate people on the issues that are the most important. But, you know, and that's not to say I couldn't do that in that type of position.
Yeah.
But, of course, that's not my focus. Now, you know, there are three parties in Saskatchewan that are alternative to the establishment. That are, one is the Buffalo Party.
Right.
They just elected a leader. There's two others, the True North Saskatchewan. It's not a party yet. And then Saskatchewan United, which isn't a party yet. They're both gaining signatures and trying to get enough signatures to establish themselves as a party. But, you know, who knows? If an opportunity arises, it would be something that I would consider, only as it benefits the voter in this province or in this country, that I would be able to educate and inform them as to the big picture and what's really happening. Because at the end of the day, our establishment politicians from every single party, federally, provincially, and municipally, have not informed the masses of this incredibly consequential agenda that's going to change every aspect of everyone's life. And nobody's ever said anything to anybody about it. And that should piss everyone off. So,
well, this is a very big sigh, because the main thing is, a lot of people believe, like I do, this is a money thing first. So we have this this world financial system where the whole world is quite tightly integrated financially. So that system has burned itself out. So they need to reset it. So they figure, okay, if we're going to reset it, how are we going to do it? The climate thing didn't work. People weren't buying it. We've been pushing it for 20, 30 years. Nobody sees any evidence of anything that we've been saying, and they can tell that we're double speaking and going back and forth. So what do? We do what's tried and true. We bring in plague laws. Plague laws have been used for hundreds of years. People buy into the virus theory. They buy into the contagion theory. It's never been disproven because it works. People are going to believe it. We're going to put them in a state of fear, and then we can manipulate the hell out of them. Well, and then we're going to try and transition back into climate again, because at least we got the people where we want them. We got them softened up, and then slowly we can implement this financial system and then bring in all the goodies that come along with this electronic digital currency. We can just make this thing so malleable and work so well. No one will have ever seen anything like this. My point is, you are one guy in Saskatchewan up against the world. This is a world takeover. This is not Canadian takeover. We're just the first country that's going to sacrifice on the altar of eco-fascism to become a model for the world. And Canadians always have wanted and gone for being the model for the world. They've always touted, since I've been born in 67, they've always made us the model country where this is how we mix all the world's religions and ethnicities together, and we all get along, and we're all happy, and we all sing the same crappy national anthem. I mean, you're up against such a massive tsunami. I mean, isn't it just awesome? Don't you just get overwhelmed thinking about it? I mean, I would.
No, because, you know, I've known that for a long time, that I'm just a little guy in this big war we're in. But I'm also a believer that individuals, people can change the world.
Yeah.
And I'm not alone. There's a lot of other people that are trying to do similar things, I guess, that I am.
I don't know who they are, because you're the only one I've ever been able to figure. You're the only one that has all the pieces. No one else talks. Like, I don't speak out in public like you do.
I'm pretty focused, though. I'm, you know, my agenda has never changed. It's always been the same since I've made a presence of myself.
Yeah.
It has always stayed the same, and it always will, because this is the agenda
For the 21st century. I mean, it's Agenda 21, for God's sakes.
It is.
And the other thing is that I wonder about, and how you react to this. They have a plan for the 21st century. Okay, if we don't want their plan, what's our plan? Because everything has gone bankrupt now. They bankrupted all countries. Canada is technically as bankrupt as can be. We're one interest payment away from just turning over everything to whoever holds our paper. So what's our plan? Because we don't have a plan.
That's an interesting question. So, you know, but I'm looking at other nations, especially specifically BRICS, right, which is the countries most populated on the planet, who all told the World Health Organization to go pound it with their global pandemic treaty.
Right.
You know, we're talking about Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa.
Right.
And they've all said no, essentially saying no to globalism.
Right.
They've said no to the Ukraine and the World Economic Forum pet project that's happening there.
Right.
Yeah. They've said no to. So, you know, I'm not sure that the globalists are really in the position to win.
Right. That's
which
true.
Means we better get our ducks in a row very soon.
Mm.
And I've said this in discussions with Salim Mansour that, you know, if I'm Russia or China or India or Brazil or whatever, and I'm watching what's taking place, I'm watching the Western world implode on itself because of this agenda and their agreement to it. If I'm any of those other countries, I'm going to play along. I'm going to pretend that we're going to do the same as Canada. We're going to talk a really big game, but we're just going to sit back and watch them implode and destroy themselves.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. And so we better wake up very quickly. And I think just naturally, at some point, there will be this tipping point that takes it back the other way, that says, okay, you know what? All these other countries are putting the brakes on this shit. Mm. When are we going to do it? And we better start thinking about it. So I think there's going to be that point in time. And I think it'll be before, you know, we get really to that point where we've self-destructed. You know, I'm hopeful. Again, it's going to take people like myself and yourself and others to talk about it, because our politicians don't, because they're all committed to this other idea. But, you know, hopefully we can do that.
You're convinced that Russia and China are on the good side? Because I talked to a Canadian who's from Russia, and she thinks
that's relative.
I know. She thinks they're all part of it.
Allies? Absolutely not. I trust Putin as far as I could throw him? Absolutely not.
No, he's but injecting his people
in the
too.
Best interest of their people.
No, I know.
They're making decisions that's in the best interest of their countries.
Yeah, it seems like it.
Right?
But he's also injecting his people too. And that's part of the plan as well. That's the problem.
Absolutely.
That's why.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, they, it's all about it. It's all fighting for power and control. And, you know, yeah, I don't trust them as far as I could throw them, but, you know, they're doing what's best for the survival of their nation state. We better start thinking in those terms as well.
So are you getting positive response? Because Agenda 21 is a very dry subject. It's sustainable development goals. You just say those three words and most people's eyes must just roll back into their heads. It's not sexy stuff. And I know, and I reposted your video from the other day on my video platform, FakoTube. First, I thought, well, this is pretty dry. But then as you got revved up, I thought, oh, yeah, people really need to know this, because I've been reposting a lot of stuff from a guy I found the other day named Michael S. Kaufman, Dr. Kaufman, who's been talking about this since the 90s. And you listen to that from 10 years ago, 20 years ago, it's just as relevant today as it was back then. And he went at it from a forestry United States angle, where they're taking all the land and getting people off the land, and this eco-fascism, this eco-religion where you are on the same par as a rock. I mean, this is crazy stuff that these people believe, these eco-fascists. It's really amazing. So we are up against such a massive cult, really. The eco-fascists, whatever you want to call them, eugenicists. I mean, these guys have all congealed into this one super glob that's really making a run for it. And they're poisoning us on purpose. I mean, they're all in right now. It's crazy.
But all of these things though, right? All of these, you know, whether it's vax or COVID lockdowns or climate change nonsense, it's all necessary, right? Yeah. It's all part of the equation to ultimately wake up that critical mass, right? Like, you're never going to have 100%. You're never going to have 70%, but you might have a percentage that can change, you know, the trajectory of our country. And it's going to happen. It's absolutely inevitable. If they want to achieve their goals, then they're going to have to burst everybody's bubble that I've been trying to burst for years. It's either I'm going to burst their bubble or their bubble's going to burst naturally based on what's coming. And at some point, again, there'll be this tipping point where, okay, enough shit has happened. Our lives have been impacted enough that people are awake, because all of a sudden they can't pay the mortgage. All of a sudden they can't pay rent. They can't buy food. They can't drive. Because of everything's too expensive and they can't afford it, all of a sudden people start waking up. You know, farmers, they should be waking up right now.
Yeah, with the fertilizer. Yeah.
With fertilizer and fuel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all insane. You know, so they should really be waking up en masse, and a lot of them are. So it's all this stuff is necessary. All this pain that we're going to go through is 100% necessary, because that's what's going to wake people up. And at some point, again, I don't know how much pain we have to go through. We'll get to that point. We will turn this around, and we're not alone. We're not the only country that this is happening to.
No, I know. It's worldwide.
Sort of mass awakening.
Like, do you? One of the things, because I think when you talked to Jeremy McKenzie, and I had kind of heard of the guy, and I started listening to his Ragecast, and they're just fantastic. The guy should definitely do talk radio. Well, he is doing talk radio because this is the new medium, right. So it's great that he's doing it. And when I looked up Diagolon, I thought, what the hell is this? And then you explained it, and he explained it, and I thought, man, that is, like, Diagolon actually is a great idea. I know he was a joke where he's running his finger on his phone diagonally from Alaska to Florida, but I thought, this actually is probably what could happen. Because if anyone doesn't understand Diagolon.com, he ran a finger on his phone on a map of North America, and he basically said, Alaska to Florida, with all the flyover states and flyover provinces, this is sort of the rural area of North America, and these are the people that they're the rural, they're the Christians, they know what's going on, they don't like the coast, they don't like their capitals for obvious reasons. These are the people, this is going to be the dividing line between what I called earlier, the physicals and the virtuals. The virtuals are the ones that sit on their keyboard and make policy, and the virtuals and the physicals are the ones that are doing the work, growing and
creating.
Food.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So this is actually quite a distinct possibility. And I guess I would probably move to Diagolon because I'm in Toronto. So,
well, it's already happening. My phone rings almost daily with people from Ontario and Quebec that are wanting to get the hell out, and they want to move to Saskatchewan or Alberta. It's already happened. There's lots of people from Ontario that have already moved here that I know personally. So, it's happening, and it's happening in the States too. So,
there is a migration,
and
even though, and I know that Jeremy says this is my imagination, and the government sees this as attacking my imagination, but could it be? Is it possible? And I don't know if he's addressed this, that they actually see that. If people like me that have actually figured out what's happening, this could be a reality. So maybe they are taking it seriously for a reason, that it's more than just an imagination. There's actually the planners, the controllers have to be planning for a potential division, and they have to manage it. And that's why they're bringing in all these plague laws. So they have the infrastructure, they have the guns out of the hands of legal owners, because they need a plan if they take all the food away and start food riots. Because when people are hungry, that's when all bad things happen.
Yeah.
And they have to be ready for it.
And that's what I tell people who are sort of promoting this, a violent rebellion or revolution or whatever they call it. It's very wrong-headed. It's what they're talking about will happen organically, based on the path that government has put us on and the globalists have put us on. If we don't oppose it effectively, if we don't resolve it effectively, then at some point, it will turn to that. No. This is what I'm trying to avoid.
Right.
The government is trying to force it. They want it to happen because then they get more power, then they get more control. So anybody that's pushing or talking in those lines doesn't know what they're talking about, and they should sit back and look at a little history to see which ones were actually successful and which ones weren't. So people really got to stop and think and use language that's, smart.
But people like Jeremy McKenzie have also said, and Chris Skye, they've said there is no political solution to this.
But I think Jeremy's sort of moved a little bit on that. He understands that we have to resolve this politically. It's not going to be resolved through violent revolution.
Right.
It just isn't. I mean, if you have an incredibly hard time convincing people of the reality we're in, imagine how hard of a time you're going to have convincing them to strap up and get ready.
Right.
Like, it's not going to happen. So we have to resolve this politically. And I believe to this day that we still can. But it is up to the people. Right. It's nobody's riding in on a white horse to save us.
No.
It's up to us. We have to do it. We have to do the hard work. You know, it can't just be me running around the country talking to 100 or a couple hundred people at every town hall event. It has to be communities inspired and motivated to do it themselves.
Yeah.
And educate themselves and inform each other. And I mean, this is obviously what we're trying to inspire and light up, but it is about the people. We have to get reengaged. We've abdicated our responsibilities for the last 4 or 5 decades. We have to get reengaged again.
But there's only so much engagement no matter what happens with people. I don't think people are any dumber or necessarily smarter than they ever were. There's just a known engagement factor, period. I agree they're dumber, but there's just a known engagement factor, and the people that rule over us know how many people care, even if their back is against the wall and they're being shackled and thrown into prison. But you know, the infrastructure that exists is the PPC party, because they got nothing to lose. They've got no seats. I still think they have a very weak leader, and someone like you needs to replace them, because there is some kind of infrastructure to raise money, to put out the message. There is something you could do, and you are in the PPC party. I think I am too. Yeah. I think I bought a membership. So,
I mean, I'm doing it, and it's interesting, and I'm watching these seeds that I've planted over the last 3-4 years. I'm watching them grow, and it is working, especially in the province of Saskatchewan. You know, people are waking up. People are understanding. And the more events that I go to, more and more people are attending more and more people. And these communities are still communities that talk to each other.
Right. Yeah.
They have this pipeline of information that they can disseminate. Whereas you go to the cities, neighbors don't even talk to each other.
No.
Right.
No.
So it has been effective, and it is working. It's just not. There is no quick fix. There's no silver bullet that's just going to immediately fix this. And unfortunately, a lot of us, and you know, I'm just as guilty as anybody else, we live in this world of this throwaway Walmart world where we buy cheap, it doesn't work, we throw it out, we don't fix it, and we go buy another one.
Right.
Because it's this immediate sense of gratification that we have, and nobody wants to do the hard work. Everyone wants a silver bullet and a quick fix, and it just doesn't exist. Yeah. And so, people aren't conditioned to work hard and do something real and tangible that's actually going to fix it, because they just think, well, we need a silver bullet and somebody's going to come save us. Well, it's not going to happen. So,
but what about the PPC party? Can you address that? They have an infrastructure. They have a leader. I mean, I know he's walking with James Toppin. Okay, that's nice, but he should be on the... Listen, we have the technology. You know how to use the technology. You should be on the video platform every night explaining and talking to people like you and interviewing people and saying, do you know what's coming? Like, what if everyone in Canada wants to be the first post-nation state, then you may as well just move on anyway. If we had a vote today saying this is what's going to happen, you're going to be ruled from Switzerland and you're not going to have a say in anything you do, right down to whether you can buy a steak tonight or whether you're allowed to go across the city to a concert. All this is going to be organized and managed centrally. If you want that, and maybe 20-year-olds want that, maybe they've been conditioned and maybe it's too late for us with them. So my question is, can we not use the infrastructure of, say, the PPC party just to get and educate like you're doing and duplicate yourself 1,000 times over and say, guys, this is what's coming. If you want it, I'll just go away. If enough of you say, yes, this sounds good, then okay, you've got your answer.
You know, there you could probably find some that would say, yeah, I'd be okay with that. I want the government to control my life so I don't have to think or move or do anything. There might be some that are like that. But my kids, for example, are, you know, 22 and 24 and 26. And they get it. And a lot of their friends get it. And so, yeah, I mean, should the PPC be doing – things. I'm hoping to influence the PPC, you know, based on what I've done, based on what I continue to do. You know,
or are they paid off?
Do I agree with everything the party does? Not necessarily, yeah. But do I disagree that, you know, they're in a position that, you know, maybe they don't have the same DNA that I have?
Yeah.
I guess so. You know, like I'm a different sort of cat. I don't, yeah. I'm not a politician. I'm a horrible politician. Because I tell people all the time, I don't give a shit what you think. I'm going to give you the truth.
Yeah, well, you're not being paid either by the Big Harm either. I'm wondering, where does the PPC get their money? You know, why are these people quiet? I mean, if they're paid to be quiet, okay. Then we have to start something new. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I don't think they're paid to be quiet. I mean, most of our donations are grassroots. Most of our donations are, you know, people giving $100 or $500 bucks or whatever. It's most of that comes from that. We don't have, you know, the big donors like the other establishment parties do because they're all part of it. Right.
So, right. Of course.
So it's, you know, it's a little bit tough and, but you know, it is what it is. It's a situation that we're in and it is grassroots and it has to continue to be grassroots. I don't want big donors because then big donors tell you what to do. So I don't want any part of it.
Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
So, you know, whatever it is, what it is. Are there things that I wish the PPC would do differently? Of course, but you know, it's the only federal political entity that represents, you know, and speaks against what I live my life opposing. So it's the only option we have. Does that mean if an opportunity ever arose that I wouldn't consider running for leadership? Of course I would. Why wouldn't I?
Right.
Right. Again, it would be, you know, it'd be full on, you know, but.
Well, there. Besides yourself, I mean, who else is talking about Agenda 21? Who else is out there, really? I mean, I came to you because you're the most outspoken person, but it's not like there's a long list of people to talk to that know what's happening.
No, and you know, there's some crazy people that think they have a grasp of it, but
even in the United States.
Oh, the United States is terrible.
There's,
you know what?
It's crazy.
The problem with the states is, and I talked about this last night in a spaces, Twitter spaces I was in, is the you know, Americans are so big and they're so powerful and they have been for so long that they think everything revolves around them.
Right.
And so even when it comes to this globalist agenda, they think it's the deep state in America. They think it's the Green New Deal.
Right.
And that's the only thing they can see. They can't fathom being dictated or puppeted by some foreign unelected entity.
Right.
They can't consider that, even though that's exactly what's happening.
Right.
So, you know, they're an interesting bird to watch, but at the end of the day, you know, I think they're going to lead the charge against globalism as soon as the population wakes up enough.
Yeah, when gas hits $20 a gallon and all the small trucking companies are not bringing the food to the stores, then that's, I've always said 2 years ago, I said, this is going to end in the U.S. I think the U.S. was particularly targeted with the hot lots, as they're called, with the vaccine. Because, well, there is death and destruction in Canada from the vaccine. I have a feeling it's much worse in targeted areas of the United States on purpose.
Right.
So, yeah, like I said, there's not a lot of people like you in the U.S. And all the videos I find on Agenda 21 from mainly Christians in the U.S. are 10 and 20 years old. So there is.
Yeah, so you got to follow Alex Newman.
Okay.
With the New American. It's part of the John Birch Society.
Right.
Really good.
And but, they've been talking about it for 20 years as well.
Yeah.
John Birch.
Yeah.
Okay, so do you see any hope for Canada?
I wouldn't be doing what I do if I didn't have hope. If I was, you know, I have this black pill. It's in my mouth, but I've chosen not to swallow it. I think there is still this opportunity. If I didn't, I'd probably be living in the bush in a cabin by myself because my wife wouldn't come with me.
Right, and they'd,
you know,
They'd flush you out anyway because you're not going to be allowed to live in the land. Because no one is going to live on the land. That's part of Agenda 21.
Exactly.
I mean, all this is so clear. They're going to withdraw services from the rural areas, and then you're going to have to come into the city if you have a problem, and then that's when they're going to they catch you. I mean, this is so diabolical. And like I said, people like Alan Watt have been talking about it for 25 years. And it seemed far-fetched. And when he was yapping about the vaccines, I was always thinking, what are you talking about with the vaccines? On and on about the vaccines and taking a vaccine every couple months. But now it's here. It's happening. All the so-called conspiracy theories are coming true. And they it's just full steam ahead for these, for these, 100%. For these globalists. Okay.
Yep.
So you're hopeful. Okay, well, you're doing... You're doing great work, and I keep following you and promoting your stuff, but I wish you had, a Toronto branch or an Ontario branch.
Well, we got Salim Mansour in London. And
Right. I know you talked to him, but he seems so old school. Does he I never hear the words Agenda 21 SDGs like you plainly say it, because it needs to be spoken plainly. Really?
Yeah, but you know, he's moving in that direction. We're talking more and more about it. I mean, he was the first one I've ever heard speak to mainstream media about sustainable development SDGs, and that was, you know, 4 years ago talking on the Roy Green show.
Right,
and,
Roy Green.
And so, you know, he has been talking about it, but of course, Salim, you know, he's a historian, he's a history professor. And he wants people to understand the historical context to all of this and how it all fits into the big picture.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot more to Salim. I'm zeroed in. I'm hyper focused on this because it's this that means everything. Yeah. So
it's the main idea.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is the main idea. And even where I went, I actually went to a public hearing in my small city suburb of Toronto. Because my city is a sustainable city. It's a little city, 100,000 east of Toronto. And the first condo being proposed, of one of 75 condos, 50 stories high, is they came and brought it before the people. And I went to them and I said, you guys are worried about parking. Like, there's a little plaza of 100 cars at an intersection here where they want to put 250-story condos, 1,000 units. Mm-hmm. And this is the anchor of the whole strip where they're going to put 75 condos, or 75 buildings. Say they have 100 stories between the two of them, 1,000 people. So we're talking 75,000 people over 2 miles on this little intensified strip in Toronto. And they've done it in a couple places in Toronto.
And no parking.
And no parking. And, no parking. And I said, I went in there and I just said, okay, this will be my first public speaking, kind of maybe inspired by you. I said, listen, guys, you guys are worried about where to park and the extra traffic. This is Agenda 21. If you want to know what this is, they're telling you 75 condos, of course, doesn't fit in the sleepy bedroom town, but this is Agenda 21. You don't have to worry about driving and parking because you won't have a car. You won't be allowed on the main street.
Right.
This is what it is. And I just said, look up Agenda 21, look up Rosa Corey.
Yeah.
I even spelled out because she did some really great talks on it.
Yeah, she's great.
And your city council, every other word is sustainable. They put it in there. Everything is this sustainable, that sustainable. Where do you think they got these words? I mean, this is all part of the plan. And if... You know, you can go against this one condo. It'll probably go through because this is a concerted effort. This is not an accident. Sure. This is the first volley, and you can try and stop it, but realize what you're up against. This is not one guy that randomly said, I want to put two high-story condos in the middle of nowhere. This is a plan.
Right.
And you got to know about it.
100%.
And I didn't really get a lot of reaction, unfortunately, because most of the white-haired people in the audience were just dazed and confused. They're just these older boomers. They have no idea what I'm talking about. There's no young people there because it's just homeowners, single-family homeowners that have been here for 35 years. And I said, this is for your children. If you really want to know what's going on, look these things up, because this is happening in your city now, and you got to educate yourself.
Yep.
For your children.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yep. That's the answer. And so, you know, but again, right alongside me and others educating people are the consequences to this agenda that's also going to educate people. So, you know, it's going to happen. It's just how much pain we have to go through before it does.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a crazy time to be alive. Honestly,
a time to be alive. I think it's amazing.
It is amazing that we can talk. We have our own broadcast system. You have your own broadcast system. You can talk directly to the people. You don't need any of these media outlets. They are completely irrelevant, which is great. Yes. Every day they're proving how irrelevant they are. So you have a voice, but I just wish some of these traditional national leaders like that have a platform that some of the grays, some of the older boomers actually look at and just let, you know, just try and leverage some of these guys, because otherwise we got it. Well, you're on TikTok, so you're speaking to younger people now, which is intelligent, because you got to speak to your audience wherever the hell they are scattered. So yeah, it is an amazing time to be alive. And
it is. And what an opportunity we have. Like, it's just, it's an incredible opportunity that we have in front of us that we need to embrace.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to do whatever I can to inspire as many people to get involved, to be part of history and be on the right side of history.
Yeah.
And be that guy when you tell your grandkids talk about you. Yeah, my grandpa did this. And, you know, what an opportunity we all have to take part in, you know, stopping the most nefarious attack on our values that we've ever seen. So
a worldwide takeover, and I don't want Canada to be first either. I was born here. I don't want to move. I always think, where can I run to? But then on the other hand, it's just going to catch me up somewhere else. I mean, even if I went into the Ozarks or something, they would find us there eventually anyway, if this tsunami just keeps on going. You may as well just stand your ground. So yeah, it is an amazing time. And I try and encourage other people, do the same thing. Just speak out, pass it around, share it, absolutely. Let people know. And
yeah, that's all we can do.
Well, it was great to catch up with you. This is a good show.
Yeah, you too, man. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, and I'll keep following you. And if I can get you back on when you do something else incredible, I will. But
sounds good, man.
I'm going to keep promoting what you're doing. Keep doing it and stay healthy. Don't wear yourself out ragged this time, for God's sakes. Take it easy. Take care of your health, because you only got one life. So, yeah.
I've sort of defaulted to my wife now. She's now my health advisor.
Well, that's why public people need managers, because a guy like you would probably just keep going until you dropped.
I'm an idiot.
You gotta have someone managing your time and just pacing you, saying, no, tomorrow is your day off. You've got to do this.
Right.
And
right. As I embark on a speaking tour in Saskatchewan for 9 cities. And then 2 days after that, I embark on a 7-city tour of Northern Ontario. So
yeah, you gotta be super disciplined, don't you? Really? Well, take it easy. Now, where can people find your tour? Because you're scattered all over the social medias. Is there a central place where they can check your stuff? Or
I'm banned on Facebook right now. I'm banned on YouTube right now.
Right.
So, you know, the standbys, of course, are Rumble and Odyssey, Grizzly Patriot.
Okay.
And Twitter's been good to me. I've never been banned on Twitter. I'm always there. And I drop these 2-minute drills all the time. And, of course, I'm on TikTok now as well, too. So
that's good.
So those seem to be the standbys, you know, Facebook, whenever, YouTube, whatever, you know, get woke, go broke.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Mark. Great segment. Thank you so much. And, stay well. Anytime. All right.
Yeah. Okay, man.
All the best. I'll post this. I'm going to send you a link. Hopefully you can tweet it out and get other
good. Will do.
Share. All right. Take care, buddy.
All right, brother.
All the best. Bye-bye.
See
ya. Bye-bye. There goes Mark Friesen. What a guy. I get inspired by guys like that. He's doing amazing work. You know, you got to go through the systems that are available to us, and you know, no revolutions are going to start. You just have to use the methods we're doing to convince people of what's coming down the pipe. I mean, really, you do. And I just noticed that I'm sharing the wrong screen here, but anyway, yeah, I think I was going to, he was only going to come on for 10 minutes, but, and I was going to talk about some other stuff, but now it's been an hour and I'm tired now and I got my screens mixed up. So I can't show you my slides. So if you like this show, fakeologist.com/donate, where we interview people, we talk about Agenda 21, we talk about the vaccines, we talk about psyops, we talk about hoaxes. No other website talks the way we do about this kind of stuff. And hopefully you can support us. And we're back on YouTube, fake11.com/YouTube, the number 2. But really everything that we want you to follow is on FakeoTube. So make sure you go to FakeoTube for all your video streaming stuff. I don't even know if I'm streaming on FakeoTube. I can't even tell right now because my screens are all mixed up. But anyway, that's it for tonight. Hopefully you guys enjoyed, and we will talk to you again tomorrow for the Marcus Allen Roundtable. That's tomorrow, 8 o'clock, where there'll be Marcus, Diego, and also Frank the Salt Guy. All right, take care. Good night.